welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and thank you again for tuning in. Today we have a repeat guest, Coot Blackson, joining us. Coot wrote the book, You Are the One. You can check it out on Amazon. You can go to his site, K-U-T-E, Blackson. Hold on, guys. This guy just brings it. So I really encourage you to check out this episode if you're looking for a spiritual guided message, deeply engaged in this idea of authenticity. We discussed everything from, why it is that multimillionaires, billionaires don't feel happy, the wounds that need to heal before you can find what you love, what you need to be loved, what gets in the way. I mean, we just hit on all sorts of amazing topics, and Coot speaks to each and every one of them from a heartfelt, vulnerable, and deeply passionate place. Tune in. I hope you like the show. If you do, we'd really appreciate you hopping over to iTunes, leave a review, tell a friend. Every little bit counts. Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I am here with Coot Blackstone, who was an absolute favorite. He was actually just featured on Best Of on The Art of Authenticity for his amazing podcast. So I'm excited to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Before we jump in, and there's so many, I just feel like every topic I cover with you, you're so inspired in the way that you talk to it. But I wanted to tell you just personally, there was a comment you made in the last interview, and it's from your book, this idea that no one is coming. Nobody is coming to rescue you. Nobody's coming to save you. And it has just been something that has stuck in the back of my mind. And every once in a while, I come back to it. It's such a powerful and yet simple concept. So, I was just thinking if you could spend a minute before we jump in. I found that idea so powerful because so many of us, we grow up, we're in the school systems, we have our families, and there's a way in which, right, we're being told what to do most of our lives. And then nobody's really coming, though, to save you and rescue you and make your life happen for you. And that's how I really took that sentence. Yeah. Is that what you mean? And can you share with the audience a little bit about where that came from for you?
Sure. It's a simple phrase, look, no one's coming. And it's not a few people say, oh, that sounds so morbid. I think it's for me, it's so inspiring when I hear that, when I kind of conceived of that. And what it is really is I saw so many of us, me, myself included, at a particular moment in my life, I would look at these great people and with Gandhis, Mandelas, Martin Luther Kings, the Oprahs of the world and the Bruce Lees, the Muhammad Ali's. And it's so easy to look at some of these great ones and go, wow, they're amazing. They're great. Look at them. And we so often project our power, our possibility, our greatness onto them, and we worship the great ones. And so I think what that does is it abdicates our own responsibility and ownership for taking our own power and living our own power and sharing our own gifts with the world. It's easier to say, well, that person will do it, or they're the ones that are incredible. They're born a certain way. And so no one's coming my intention was to inspire each person to reclaim their power, inspire each person to take full responsibilities for who they were and to take full responsibility for their gifts. And there to share that with the world and realize, look, no one owes us anything. No one owes us anything at all. I believe that each of us, we've been given everything. The moment we're born, there is a spark of the infinite inside of us. There is a spark of the divine inside of us. We are literally living, breathing miracles. And many years ago, when I first came to the U.S. as a young man, I found myself sitting in a tiny room, literally sitting on the floor because I had barely any furniture, complaining. And I was mad at the world, mad at life, mad at my father because I felt like I didn't have much support from my father. I had just come to the U.S. and won a green card in the lottery, came with two suitcases, knew no one in the country, and had just left my father's ministry and was not speaking to my father, was outcast by my entire community of everyone I knew growing up because I had gone against what society and what everyone expected of me. I was designated created a successor to take over my father's churches. He had 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, a huge church in London. And so I sort of took the unconventional path. I went into the unknown and literally followed my heart. But I found myself in Los Angeles months later, sitting on the ground, just frustrated, mad at the world. Somehow I thought, wow, you know, the moment I followed my dream, followed my soul, that everything would be easy. Mm. And everything would open up. And what I found is sometimes when you find your purpose, when you truly dare to listen to your soul and follow your purpose, it's not that everything is easy. Sometimes life gets even more challenging. Life gets more challenging because then you have to face the tests, the challenges, the experiences, the relationships, all of which are designed to prepare you in order to become the necessary person, to prepare you to develop the mental, the emotional, the spiritual muscles so that you can fulfill the vision and the dream and the purpose that you've been given. And I found myself in this tiny room complaining, moaning, groaning, mad at the world, mad at God, thinking like, wait a second, God, here I am. I'm following my soul and life isn't happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I was being a complete victim. Mm-hmm. And then I just had this flash, this moment that, wait a second, God doesn't owe me anything. My father owes me nothing. He gave me life. What else do I need? I have everything I need. And it was a simple moment of realization, a simple moment of responsibility, a simple moment of reflection and gratitude. And from that moment, a lot started shifting. And I think we all have this power inside of us to give and live and create. And we all have been given so much that we aren't living and giving. And I think if we did, life would be profoundly different.
Oh, I love it already. For everybody out there listening, right? It's like, this is Coot, you can just bring it. I just love talking to you. And I believe in everything you're saying. And I specifically, this is my experience as well. It's like, I jumped off, followed my passion, followed my heart, and I thought I would just get there. I would just arrive there and it would all work out. And it's like, that's just the beginning, right? That's where the work starts. And I loved what you said. You sort of develop the muscles, right? It's transforming into the person that you want to become. You're following your heart towards this path, but you have to live in this path. And on the other side of this discussion, though, of you and your living, following your dreams in this apartment, frustrated, it's not coming together, standing up, you wrote this book, you are the one, right? Like, you all in this purpose driven space of standing up in your own life. But so many people, you were featured in an Inc. magazine article. On the other side of this conversation, there's so many people that, you know, you are the one. I could easily start thinking, wow, so let me look to the people who are the ones, the Gandhis, but also all the people who are billionaires, all the people who have made all this money, they have fame, success, and right, they've done so much with their life. I'm sure they're the ones that are the most happy. And I'm friends with many people at that level. I've interviewed them. I sold a company. It's the biggest fallacy there is. So you wrote about this. Why are so many of the world's wealthiest people unhappy? And what do they need to do to shift that?
You know, I think sometimes you might get everything that you thought you wanted based only to realize that, wait a second, what I thought I wanted was not what I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when you go after what you thought that you wanted based on who you thought you were, then you get what you thought you wanted to realize this is not what I really wanted. It kind of creates a sense of a letdown, a disappointment, sometimes a depression, because now you have the very thing that you thought was going to make you happy. It's one thing if you don't have it, then you're always chasing an illusion, a hope. There's always this fantasy in the future and there's a gap. But when you actually get the thing that you thought you wanted and it still doesn't fulfill you, I mean, that's now you have an even bigger problem, you know? Mm. And so I found that many times we're chasing goals and visions and dreams that truly aren't what we really want. You know, growing up, we had certain pain. Maybe growing up, certain needs weren't met. Maybe growing up, we were abandoned. We weren't loved. We weren't seen. We weren't validated. We weren't valued. And so many times based on this pain, many times based on this inadequacy, this insecurity, we're driven by these insecurities and the pain and the wounds of our childhood in order to set certain goals that we think will give us what we didn't get, that we think will fulfill certain needs that weren't met, that we think will validate us and get us love and value and appreciation and confidence. And so when we achieve these things, we end up realizing sadly and amazingly, this is not the case. And so I think that's a huge, huge thing that I've seen of what happens in terms of my clients and many, many people. So for me, it's not about getting more of what you want. It's ultimately, the foundation is you have to know who you are. You have to know who you truly, authentically are. And from that foundation of knowing, okay, this is who I am, not who I've been told I should be, not who my parents told me I should be, not who society told me I should be, not who I think I am, but this is who I truly, authentically am. And when we're truly in touch with who we really are, then I think we can align our goals and our visions based on our soul, based on our truth, based on our authenticity rather than just an illusion, you know? And so I think that's the starting point. And so I say you cannot truly be fulfilled or live an authentic life being someone that you're not. You cannot truly live an authentic life doing something that isn't truly in alignment with your heart. You cannot truly live an authentic life. I don't care how much money you have, how much success you have in the world, truly live an authentic life if you're not living in alignment with your core truth. And I think that's the foundation. That's really the foundation of where we have to start. And so to me, success isn't simply a function of money or what we have. The degree to which we are becoming and evolving into and becoming and revealing our most authentic selves, the degree to which we're becoming who we truly were meant to be in this lifetime, the degree to which we are learning the lessons for which our soul may be incarnated, you could say, into this lifetime, the degree to which we're learning those lessons and growing and evolving. And I think at the end of the day, that's what it's really about, our growth, our soul's growth and evolution.
So let me back up, because you said something that I think is really, really important. I want to dive in a little deeper. So these, mm-hmm. you have these insecurities, maybe these things that you didn't get as a child, there's wounds. And so to heal these wounds, we set these goals in the hopes of, you know, getting the love that you never wanted. If the answer is to find out who you are, but you have these yes. wounds, but you're not aware or you're not mm-hmm. willing to have the vulnerability to accept that these wounds are driving forces, what would you say? Because I think so many people are in this place right now in their lives, right, where they know that there's something within them that's a pain point, but maybe not realizing that this is driving their actions towards setting goals that they believe will fill that up. Where do they start? Where does that process begin?
You know, I think first we have to become aware. We do have to become aware, because many of the times we are not in touch with the fact that this is the case. We're not in touch with the fact that we are conditioned or we're being driven by certain insecurities. We often think, no, this is just who I am.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, I always ask the question, is who you are who you really are, or is it simply who you've been conditioned to be? And we're not aware that we've been conditioned into being a certain person. We're not aware that we've been conditioned into a certain character, a certain personality, a certain way of being that we have learned to be in order to ultimately function and survive. And so the first thing is we have to start questioning. We have to start questioning, who am I? We have to start questioning, wait a second, is this really who I am? Is this really what I believe? Is this true? And then I think the willingness to feel our feelings, the willingness to feel the feelings, all the feelings that we've learned to disconnect from and suppress and shut down, the willingness to feel those feelings, which can often be scary, which often mm-hmm. you know, end up not feeling those often ends up disconnecting us from the ability to live our authentic selves. You know, when we're born, I often talk about when we're born free. You know, as children, we're these amazing beings. We jump on we cry, we shout, we scream, mm-hmm. we run up to people, we hug, you know, if we feel love, we go hug them. You know, we don't sit and go, oh, what do you think of me? We're just in touch with this natural light, this natural effervescence. We're in touch with our own unconditioned essence and presence. But then we come into life, and that's when the conditioning process begins. We come into life, and then we meet our parents, who are just doing the best that they can do based on their conditioning, based on their parents, based on their grandparents, and that gets passed down to us. And maybe we're born into a situation where there's divorce, where there's pain, where there's trauma, where there's hurt, where we're abandoned. And so what starts happening for us as these sensitive, amazing beings is we start learning all sorts of defense mechanisms, all sorts of, we'll call them survival strategies, in order to not feel the pain. And as a result, we start creating, erecting, designing, often unconsciously, all of these survival strategies in order to to avoid the pain, keep ourselves safe, not feel the pain. And so we start contorting ourselves and shutting down parts of ourselves ultimately to survive. And that starts disconnecting us from our true feeling. That starts disconnecting us from our authenticity. And then we lose touch with a deeper dimension of who we are. We lose touch with a deeper dimension of our own capacity to feel our truth. Then we go out into the world and we start developing a way of being in the world, the sense of, you know, well, who do I need to be in order to have you love me? And who do I need to be? When I'm loud and my dad says be quiet, or children should be seen and not heard, or when I'm nice, or when I say yes, and when I'm a good girl or good boy, then I get tremendous amounts of love. Or when I'm perfect, then I get even more love. But when I'm not, then I get pain. Mm-hmm. Then we start learning the sense of, you know, who do I need to be in order to be loved by my parents? Who do I need to be in order to be loved by the world? And we start developing a mask and a persona and a role in terms of who we think we need to be in order to fit in, to be loved, to be validated. You know, for me growing up as a young boy, it was being the minister's kid, right? It was being the perfect one, being the nice guy, you know, being the responsible one, being the achiever. You know, and that's kind of how I learned. Well, if I do these things, if I'm this way, being the happy one all the time, if I'm this way, then wow, I get love. Wow. So mm-hmm. I just kept doing more of that because mm-hmm. it worked. And so we learn these two ways to disconnect from pain. So we start shutting down parts of ourselves, and then we start developing masks, roles, and personas that then we kind of contort ourselves into as a way of being to get love, fit in, validation. And then all of a sudden we get contorted into this shape of this person that we end up saying, well, this is me. This is who I am. This is me. And based on that, you know, then that way of being gets reinforced in the world. Some of us learn to become very successful based on, you know, shutting down parts of ourselves. You know, some of us, we become, maybe certain needs weren't met as children. My parents weren't around. Emotionally, they weren't present. So we became the independent one. I don't need you. I don't need anything. I don't need a man. I don't need a relationship. I don't need a woman. I don't need anything. I'm an island unto myself. And so love can't really get in, but love also can't really get out. And this way we can't really be hurt. We can't really be disappointed. But we manage to go through life, and this sort of independent emotional, you know, sort of stance might help someone, let's say, become very successful in business. I know I know a particular client of mine who was a woman who kind of became this independent person because of the very reason I'm saying it. And it helped her become a very strong, independent, self-sufficient, powerful businesswoman who would absolutely not crumble, and she didn't need anything from anyone. She just made things happen herself. Yet when she came to me, she realized, cool, this has helped me, this way of being has helped me succeed in the business world, but I'm alone. I don't have very many relationships, and I don't have a man in my life, and I would like a man. I don't understand why I don't attract mm-hmm. anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, because she had these walls up, you know, mm-hmm. she had these walls up that really didn't allow anyone to get too close to her. So we develop all of these ways of beings. And so I think the first step is to become aware that we are conditioned, and then be willing to feel the feelings that we often have suppressed deep inside in order to just function and survive. I would say that's two steps to start.
I love the detail. And I want to pick up on a theme that you're bringing up about love. Mm-hmm. So who do I need to be loved? I go out in the world and I succeed, and I believe that this mask that I'm putting forward is working. And maybe you look around and you see parts of your life aren't working. But if you believe that this is how you're seen and loved, how hard is it then for people to pull that mask off if they actually connect it to the only way that they think that they can get love? Is it by finding self-love first and then moving forward? How does that work so they don't believe that it's going to get worse?
You know, I think it can be very difficult. And I think sometimes, honestly, I think it can be quite scary, you know, because if we think this is who I am, it becomes our identity. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes our sense of, like, this is who I am. And so I just want to acknowledge that it can be scary, but I do feel that the path of true transformation requires letting go. The path of true transformation requires the willingness to feel feelings, to peel layers away. And it does require some courage. It does require courage. Mm-hmm. What I found is the more we shed layers and the more we let go of layers and patterns and personas, we will look. I think it's only honest to say we will lose certain things in our lives. We will, in quotation marks, lose people. We will lose whatever is not truly in alignment with who we authentically are. And I think the more we connect to our authentic selves, the more we connect to who we truly are, from that place, we will then start attracting to us new relationships. We will then start attracting to us new friendships, new connections, new opportunities, new possibilities. We'll also see the world in a whole different way. So as challenging and as scary as it might seem in the beginning of the process, because often as people begin that process of, okay, I'm not who I thought I was, and you know, wow, everything is falling apart. You know, everything is falling apart that I thought I was. It can be a scary process. But I think as we go through that time and as we peel the layers away, we get to find out what remains. We get to find out who am I really once all these illusions and layers have gotten peeled away. And then we get to set a foundation for our lives. Then we get to create our life on a foundation of truth, our lives and our relationships on a foundation of authenticity. And I think that's when we actually stand a chance of having a truly authentic and successful life.
And you said two things that I want to have you speak to. One is you mentioned becoming authentic, like, which I think was intentional, that it's a process to becoming. And most of the people I've read, the philosophers, that most of them speak to this idea that we never really arrive and finish, and that there's a foundation of truth and authenticity, and we're becoming, we're growing into our authentic self. So one, did you mean to say becoming? And then what is the payoff, right? Like if it's not money and fame and success, why do all this work? Because it is scary and right, it is an overwhelming process. What is it that makes it worthwhile for somebody to engage in all of it?
What is it that makes it? You know, I'll speak for myself and what I've observed. I think that when we live inside of the prison of our personas, when we live inside of the prison of our condition, we often recreate painful experiences over and over and over and over again in our future. And so when we live inside of that, we're not free. We're not free to truly be ourselves. We're not free to truly express ourselves. We're not free to truly be, here's for me the payoff, to truly be alive, to feel that sense of profound joy. You know, you look in a child's eyes, a child, they're alive. And so when we don't live our truth and our authenticity, and when we just live stuck inside of conditioning, we're not alive. And so for me, if there's a payoff, it's aliveness. It's being truly, truly alive. I looked when I was, you know, 17, 18, and my path was set out for me. I was supposed to take over my father's churches. I had a choice. You know, I looked, I was being and living in a way that everyone expected me to be. And I looked into my future and I saw if I followed everyone's expectations for my life, I might be successful by everyone else's standards, but I would literally be living dead. And when I dared to just feel, when I dared to feel the truth of that, the reality of that, and not run away from it, sometimes we know the truth. Sometimes we feel the truth. Many times we sense the truth, and that scares us because we're afraid of, if I follow the truth in my heart, then what are the consequences? Yeah. If I truly follow the truth that I'm not happy in this job, or I'm not happy in this relationship when I've invested so much, or I'm not happy in this situation, or this is no longer in alignment, or I need to address this friendship. We often know the truth. It's not that we're confused. We often play this game of confusion, right. but we're afraid of the consequences. Yeah, and so so what we end up doing is we distract ourselves. You know, we social media it away, we drink it away, sex it away, shop it away, work it away, busy ourselves with our friends, with our lives, just so we don't have to feel the truth of our heart. There is a deep knowing inside of each and every one of us. We know. And I believe that happiness is simple, not always easy. It's simple. It requires us to feel that knowing. And so when I looked into my future, and I saw the path, the expected path, I knew that was death. And I just dared to allow myself to be honest, to tell the truth about that, and to feel, literally, just simply feel the pain. Feel the pain, to feel the pain of the reality of that path.
Mm.
Not run away from it, not pretend, not rationalize, you know, it's not so bad. I
can make a 20-step action plan like that morning, right?
It was just to feel the pain of, wow, me betraying my own self. Mm-hmm. And not to lie to myself about, well, I could possibly make it work. It was just the raw truth. And the courage to feel the pain was, for me, so great that I knew I didn't have a choice. And that's what made me, you could say, it compelled me to follow my heart, even though I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing, what that would entail, going into the unknown, which can often be scary. It's going into the unknown. Oh, my God. What will happen? Once I saw, you could say, the consequence and the pain of what I would be living, I didn't really have a choice, you know. And I think at the end of our lives, look, we take nothing with us. You know, you talked about the Inc. article. I work with many billionaires and very successful people, as well as, you know, a wide range of folks. But one of the things I often tell my very successful clients, that sounds obvious, but look, we take nothing with us at the end of our lives. We will all die.
Yeah.
Every one of us. It is guaranteed.
Yeah.
Whether you're Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, David Bowie, it is our destiny in this lifetime for this body. Our souls, hey, live forever. We will all die. We take nothing with us at the end of our lives. No car, no trophy, no bank account, no shoes, can't even take your children. I think the only thing we can ultimately take with us is our own growth, our own evolution. So our own growth. Who did I become? Did I become more authentically myself? Did I learn the lessons for which I was born for? Did I become an authentic human being? Am I someone, you know, am I actually someone that I can be proud of and happy being in terms of myself? And so we take nothing with us other than our own evolution, our own growth, and I think the degree to which we loved. And so at the end of our life, I think it's pretty simple, but it's not always easy based on our fears and conditioning and some of the things we're talking about.
And trading off the short-term benefits of maybe the life that you've created versus the life that you need to bring that joy, which brings me to my last question for you, this idea of joy. Before I had experienced it, I sort of thought it was synonymous with happiness or, you know, I don't know, it was just another word. People who will live in an authentic life, and now for myself, it's a word that comes up over and over and over, and I think of it as being separate. It's separate from pleasure. It's separate from happiness. It's not short-lived in my mind. It's this experience of true, genuine peace in your life, a calm that comes with a happiness, but it's a different quality of happiness than buying a sweater or a puppy wagging its tail, right? It's this contentment through your life. When you bring up the idea of joy as the ultimate experience, once you've had the courage to step forward into your life, is that what you found? Is it this deep contentedness within your life?
You know, I think for me, joy is being in touch with the true essence, spirit, whatever label you want to put on it. Joy is being in touch with the true spirit, the true essence that is not based on, you know, external stuff, that is not based on, because everything external is transitory, it comes and goes. So when your happiness is based on a handbag or an iPhone or a certain result happening, mm-hmm. it comes and goes. It goes up and down like the wind. And so to me, real joy is more to do with being connected to your own beingness, mm-hmm. you know, your own sense of beingness, not a sense of doingness or havingness. And I think that's the difference. And so being truly in touch with your own beingness, you know, your Not just who you think you are, but we've been talking about your true essence. And I think when we're in touch with that, that's joy. You know, you look at a child is in joy. And part of being in joy is they're in touch with their being. And they're also just being fully in their being in the moment. And I think being fully present in beingness, in your being, in the moment is real joy. That's not based on... It's a freedom that is not based on anything happening or not happening. It's just being here, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like being in touch with one's breath, just feeling one's breath happening. I mean, there is such a, at least for me, such a profound simplicity to just attune to one's breath and feel one's breath. And if you actually simply connect to your breath and feel your breath, and you feel what is breathing you, you feel a life force energy, you will feel, you know, a vitality. You will feel that there is like a life force, a vitality, an energy, a something that is breathing and living you. And it is like aliveness itself, you know? And so I think, to me, that's the source of joy. It's the foundation of joy. It's within us.
Well, I just can't tell you how much I enjoy, and it brings me so much joy to connect to you and have these beautiful discussions. Your book, You Are the One, it was released. It's coming out in paperback. How's this journey been with the book? Where are you in this process? Fill us in a little on, you know, I think I met you as it was coming out, and now it's going into its next phase.
Yeah, it's been, you know, for me, it's been a beautiful journey. I've always wanted to honestly write a book, and many books since I was a kid. I read my first self-help book when I was 8 years old, and I felt the power of writing and
Which book
transformational
was it?
Books. It was a book by a woman called Shakti Gawain, mm-hmm. who wrote Creative Visualization. And, you know, as an 8-year-old kid, when you read a book about creative visualization, this is, you know, way before The Secret. And mm-hmm. as an 8-year-old kid, you see the power of creative visualization. I got so excited, like, wow, my thoughts create my reality and feelings and energy. And so I really felt the power. So from age 8 to 18, I probably read 800 books, became obsessed with books. And so I always wanted to write a book. And for me, You Are the One has been gestating for a long time. I don't feel like I wrote the book. I feel like, if anything, I'm a servant of the book. And it was not the book I thought I was going to write. I had my own idea of what I thought I was going to write, which I sold to the publishers. And it was a very humbling and amazing journey, because I think the soul of the book revealed itself to me. And I think that was, you know, a continual learning and another proof for something that I teach, which is sometimes what we often ask ourselves, well, what do I want? You know, what do I want in my life? What goal, what do I want to achieve? And I think the next level is not simply asking, what do I want? But it's really becoming quiet, becoming still, beyond the mind, beyond the ego, beyond the conditioning, becoming still and listening to the knowing inside, listening to our souls and asking ourselves, well, what is it that's actually seeking to happen through me? What actually wants me? What's seeking to express through me? What's seeking to happen through me, rather than just what do I want? And because I thought I wanted to write a certain kind of book. And so when I got still in the process, this is even before the book came out, it became clear that a different kind of book was being required and invited. And so I felt like I was just a servant to the soul of this book, to midwife the message of this book in a particular way. And so I thought, you know, very humbled. It's been an amazing journey to see it really inspire many lives around the world, and looking forward to another phase in the journey of the paperback and reaching more people around the world. But it's been really, really special to feel the impact, because, you know, sometimes when you're in the process of writing something, it's hard. I hate writing. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I hate the process of writing. I like speaking and communicating and being on stage. And so it was not easy. It was not this just love and light and unicorns and violins. It was a tough, challenging process. The publisher turned down like 9 manuscripts of the original book. And that's when I thought, wow, but it moved me to a state of surrender. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's that moment where maybe things aren't working out. It's that moment where things don't quite go according to our plan, at least the plan of who we think we are and how we think life should be. It's in that moment when I think we're forced to surrender. And I think it's in that moment of surrender that life begins. It's in that moment of surrender where we dare to get ourselves out of the way, where we dare to let go of control and say, okay, universe, I've taken life. I've taken this relationship. I've taken this moment as far as I can take it. What is seeking to happen here? I'm available. I'm open. Use me. Speak through me. I'm available. Write through me. Like, what needs to happen? And so I feel like our goals and our dreams are, they choose us. And so I feel like the book chose me. And so if our goals and dreams choose us, then each of us are really vessels. We are vessels for the manifestation and the fulfillment of those visions and dreams. And so I think that's how I view the book. And it's a humbling journey.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And I just don't know how many times I can learn that lesson. You know, it's like white knuckling your way through something and all the ways in which you feel like it really needs to come together. And the moment you let go and surrender it, all of a sudden what you really, what you think you wanted becomes what you really needed. And this amazing miracle happens in your life. Kut, thank you so much for joining us. You are the one. If people are looking to purchase the book, where can they find you? Where can they find the book?
Yeah, a couple of ways. They can get the book. They can go to, obviously it's on Amazon. They can go directly to Amazon.com. They can go also to my book website, youaretheonebook.com, and they can purchase it there. There's also quite a few free gifts there that they can get when they purchase the book. And if they want to find out about my work, simply www.kutblackson.com. They can find me there.
And we will, as always, have all the links on the site. Kut, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode.
Thanks, Matt.